Okay, I think we're ready to get started. This is an open Q&A session. We figured we would start off doing introductions, but it turns out we ended up with so many experts that it would take too long to introduce everyone. So I get to do the quick round of introductions for everyone. Hopefully, you've probably already met Johan through sessions earlier in the week, real-world guy number one. Brian from the Windows Update team overall, Rob from the Configuration Manager team, Michael, another real-world person, Pallavi from the Setup team, Mark from the Upgrade Analytics/AppCompat side. We've then also got quite a few people in the first couple of rows to answer any other questions that come up around servicing and provisioning and really just about any topic you can imagine around setup, deployment, and servicing. So we'll open it up to questions. The main thing that we want to mention, find a microphone. There are two of them in the center here. If you're upstairs, there are no microphones upstairs. So if you want to ask questions from upstairs, we can't hear you. Come downstairs, ask the questions from there. We do have another Ask the Expert session tomorrow afternoon with a broader set of people around security and management and other topics. So for this one, really want to focus on deployment, servicing, and provisioning. With that, let's open it up. Anyone who has questions, please find the microphones. If you stop asking questions of us, we'll then be forced to ask questions of you and turn you into a giant focus group. So ask away.
I've only got one question, 34 parts. So we have Config Manager 2012, and I don't want to do traditional operating system deployment. I want to service them and provision them like we do with Intune, but using Config Manager. I brought this up, I think, at your session yesterday. What's the best practice today if I'm bringing in, let's say, 100 Surface devices to not have to image them, but to get them into the domain, to get them to enterprise, and to get the Config Manager client on them so I can deploy software? Does that make sense? The question? How do I not image it? Best practice.
So I think one of the issues is going to be if you're wanting to deploy 1607, you're going to need to be on current branch 1606 in order to benefit from the ADK.
We're there.
If you were in my session yesterday, you will have seen the different scenarios that you have. So the provisioning package is a really good one for that out-the-box scenario where you can just layer down that provisioning package and uplift the out-of-the-box image that Dell or Microsoft are providing on their devices.
And I haven't tried that, and I've just learned through the conference where I press the Windows key 5 times. Is that where I would do that? I guess I'm looking for a little more
detail. That's certainly an option, yes, for the scenario where an IT person is going to go through that effort. Yeah, during the first UBI screen when the machine is turned on, hit the Windows key 5 times, browse to a USB key that contains the provisioning package. That provisioning package then can join the PC into Active Directory, name the computer, even potentially install the Config Manager client. Now, in order to do that, you'd have to embed the commands to do that in the provisioning package, or alternatively, just use another push mechanism for getting the Config Manager client on the machine.
And so I'm hearing use a USB stick for now.
If you wanted to do it that way, yes. There are other scenarios that are more cloud-driven so that you could use an Azure AD account, join it into Azure AD, which would then do an MDM enrollment into Intune. But if your goal is to do Config Manager, then you have to kind of move to that other approach.
Would it make sense to use Intune to get it into AD and then use Intune to push it back to Config Manager? We have both, but we're not using Intune.
It'd be great if you could push the Config Manager client down through Intune, but there's limitations to the MDM channel that mean you can only push a simple MSI. Anyone that's looked at the SCCM or CCM setup, it's not a simple MSI. So there's nothing that will allow you to do that natively. You could go to the extent of packaging up the Config Manager setup into an MSI, but there's mess to be had there. We are looking into how we can extend those capabilities, but at the moment, the best process would be to leverage the MDM channel and have a lighter management of those devices.
What would be the second best process to not use the MDM?
Second best, if your goal is to get them into Active Directory,
Right.
using a startup script or push installation, gets the Config Manager client onto the machine, it's just not going to be instantaneous. So you would join the machine into the domain, the Config Manager client's going to kick in later, and then can continue the provisioning process using task sequences or software distribution or whatever else.
If you were to ever write a blog on that, I would follow it and use that solution.
Add that to the list.
Watch this space, we're working on something.
It's very, very common to use a group policy with a startup client script to install the agent for Config Manager. It's one of the most common ways to actually get the client installed. Jason Sandis on his blog, configmanagerforthewin.com or ftw.com, it's widely used. It's a really good script.
For the servicing updates, what is the best way to uninstall the update and block it from coming down if there is a, you know, life-shattering emergency at our company? And is it the same procedure for quality updates and feature updates?
So let's start with quality updates. If you have an issue with a particular quality update and you want to keep that update from coming down, the answer is going to vary based on the tool that you're using. If you're using Windows Update for Business, do you want to talk about that one?
If you're using Windows Update for Business, you have the ability to roll back, but when you want to prevent it from coming down again, you can defer those machines to push that out to a further date, and you can do that for both feature and quality updates, and those deferrals vary for each, but that gives you plenty of time to make sure things are golden and ready to go in your environment before that deferral time's out.
Yeah, in the WSUS case, it's a little easier. You can decline the update. You can, revoke the approval on the update, and it will then just not deploy it again. With Config Manager, you have the same options. You can prevent that update from reinstalling. So it's going to depend. The uninstallation is a little trickier. That requires a little bit more work if you want to remove it from existing machines. That's not too bad with WSUS and Windows 7 and 8.1. It's a little more work with Windows 10.
So a question on Windows 10 OSD. So the task sequence step that does the apply network settings, joins the system to the domain. Can you specify the client to join to a specific domain controller like you can use if you use the PowerShell commandlet, add computer? Can you say, hey, if we have to pre-create objects, but it takes a while to replicate across the organization, can you say, hey, I want it to join to this domain control over here so there's no delay? Is that possible?
Well, if you look at the way the step works, the apply network settings just takes the settings and puts them into the unattend.xml and then allows the UBI process to process those and join the PC into the domain. That doesn't provide any parameters to let you specify what domain controller. So that won't work. Potentially, you could use a separate scripted join, which would allow you to specify a targeted domain controller using PowerShell or NetDom or some other tool for doing something like that. But
would I have to then make it join to work group first and then run that script later? Would that have to be?
Yes, you wouldn't be able to join it at first boot. It would have to be after first boot.
If you look into the MDT LightTouch deployment, they are actually using a script in their post-processing to recover from a failed domain join, and that script maybe can give you some clues. It's not written for Config Manager and certainly not tested on it either, but that might maybe a starting point.
Yeah, it does similar things. It's just using WMI to achieve the same result.
In-place upgrade question, just trying to figure out how to do some customizations via task sequence post-upgrade. It's difficult for me, I guess, with the admin account getting disabled after the fact. I'm just wondering, trying to figure out a way to run a few scripts before the task sequence just dies out. The ISO is the standard ISO that comes through, so a lot of the new settings that come in are just kind of wiped out that I've done for customizations. And I'm just trying to figure out a way to, we don't have the standard steps that go through the normal task sequences for deploying. So
you're using Configuration Manager?
Just in MDT for just for the in-place upgrades. So going like to 16.07, just stupid little things that are just wiping out user profile pictures and just dumb little configurations like that. But when you use the original ISO to push that down, it just kind of blanks out a lot of the stuff. So just trying to figure out a way to get in during the task sequence after the in-place upgrade has happened before it just finishes. So yeah, think of it like if you're doing like a user-driven update upgrade for just an in-place upgrade, and I just like to do some house cleaning before the end of the task sequence. Just in the end, it kicks you out. The admin account is disabled, and you know you get all your default screensavers, lock screens, all that stuff goes down. So
yeah, the intention with the MDT task sequence is for it to continue once it gets into the new OS. It uses the setup complete.cmd to continue the process once the new OS is up and running. There is a bug, though, in MDT 2013 Update 2 that keeps that second part of the task sequence from running. There was just an issue in the batch file that causes it not to set the registry key that's needed as a condition on the task sequence steps. So as a result, it just skipped them all. That's fixed in the update that should be coming out within the next...
And that's kind of what I'm talking about. Is there a way to jump back in before you get the summary screen, but after that runs?
That's effectively, you would see those steps run before the summary screen shows up.
Okay.
At that point, it's running effectively as local system, which is never disabled. You can make changes then running as local system and not have to worry about the disabled administrator account.
Awesome. Thank you.
I have a question about upgrading Windows 7 BIOS-based PCs into Windows 10 UEFI-based PCs. Are there any way to automate the deployment and changing from BIOS to UEFI in order to not have any manual action when you deploy Windows 10?
BIOS to UEFI. There's actually a session right after this one. I don't remember what room it's in, but talking about how to do that. But the basic steps you need to go through involve changing the firmware of the device to switch it over, changing the disk layout, and also then laying down the upgraded operating system. Doing that as a single process is challenging. We are looking at some ways to simplify that, but for right now, a config manager task sequence or two, depending on the scenario, can do that. It just requires getting the OEM utilities that are required to configure the hardware, running those to switch the machine, backing all the data up off of the machine because you're going to reformat and repartition the disk, and then laying down the new OS and pulling that data back again. So it's doable. There are a few blogs out there. I know the Config Manager guys are working to make that simpler so you can get it down to one task sequence.
Yeah, last night we released our 16.09 technical preview. In that technical preview is a new step that allows you to run that third-party tool. Most hardware providers, certainly the mainstream ones, have a utility that you need to use to change their firmware, and we have that step to allow you to do that. It still requires you to wipe the box because if you've ever looked at a BIOS machine compared to a UEFI machine, the disk format is completely different, so we need to do that change of format layout. So it's not possible to do it completely in place, but you can now, as of 16.09 in the technical preview, you can do that as a single task sequence in Config Manager.
Patrick. Wonderful, thank you.
So the UEFI session is in C302 at 4 o'clock, I believe.
Yep.
From 4 to 5:15.
Yeah, and that's Mike Terrell from 1E talking about the various challenges and some of the tools that are available to help with that.
A couple of things we learned so far is that even if you can do all that, great. Some of the machines that today run BIOS versions, they do have a UEFI mode, and a lot of these UEFI modes are experimental, almost UEFI, very close to UEFI, but not quite UEFI. So that means that you also are in the position of, you need to verify that the machine actually works in UEFI. Just assuming because it has a UEFI mode doesn't really fly. There's going to be firmware upgrades, BIOS upgrades. Some of the upgrade means that you need to be in UEFI mode to be able to do the UEFI upgrade. So if the machine didn't have UEFI as default when it was delivered, you can almost assume that UEFI doesn't fly on that machine. So be careful.
Yeah, I would qualify that just to say that if it was a device shipped with Windows 8.1 or Windows 10 that's logo certified, it will have the necessary level of UEFI on it, 231, and it will be set to go once you reconfigure the device. So it should work well for the PCs that would have shipped with Windows 10 and Secure Boot and everything pre-configured, but because you went to Windows 10, 7, you turned all that off. Now you want to turn it back on again.
Exactly. So if the machine is delivered as a BIOS machine with the ability to have UEFI, then you should be scared because that
But yes, if you try to get the seven-year-old PC out of the closet and convert it over to UEFI, don't expect good results from that. Because they're generally not running UEFI 231.
I thank you for the opportunity to allow us to ask questions in this forum. This is very helpful. And if Rob, if you can kind of hold your tongue on this, because we've already spoken a bit about this question. So the situation is we have 100,000 clients running Windows 7 Pro, X64, all BIOS. They are capable of UEFI, by the way. We want to get to Windows 10 Enterprise X64. Oh, I failed to mention we have a third-party disk encryption utility. I wonder how many people feel sorry for me right now. How many people are in the same situation as I am right now? So the question is, what's a good way to get there? We're considering wipe and drop is basically the only solution. So I'd be interested to hear if there's any other suggestions.
Well, the short answer is that you need support from the vendor that created your disk encryption application. That's the main problem. They need to provide you with drivers and the ability to pause the encryption during the upgrade process. And that's going to be the tricky one.
I've seen some people mention this. Our concern is, I assume it involves a decryption and encryption. Oh, by the way, we want to get the BitLocker too. So we want to get this thing, this third party, this offensive third party encryption thing gone.
But you were running BIOS machines and you want to shift to UEFI, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so that means it shouldn't be a problem. In that way, you can do it in two ways. You can either decrypt and wait, and then you can capture the state, reload a machine, and then re-encrypt it. Or you can treat it as a replace scenario, meaning you back up user state because that's what you're going to do anyway, and you don't decrypt the drive at all. You just switch over to UEFI, wipe the drive, put down the operating system, and put back the state. So since you're shifting and from BIOS to UEFI, you still need to destroy the hard drive, and therefore there's no point of even spending time on decrypting the drive at all.
Yeah, and that's the standard task sequence-based approach that Config Manager and MDT generally suggest is just going through the wipe and load process to move everything off, wipe it clean, start over again. The third-party disk encryption is actually, you can handle that at the same time you're fixing the BIOS to UEFI problem. So that doesn't really make the scenario any more complex since you're going to wipe the disk clean and start over with the GPT disk anyway.
I mean, both MDT and Config Manager does come with the replace sequences, the sequence that basically does a backup only of the machine and store it on the server somewhere. In the end of that sequence is where you also can add in vendor tools to actually do the configuration. Of course, the machine will be destroyed at that point, but you do have the backup. And then you do a normal, as Michael said, a normal bare metal deployment where the machine is already switched into UEFI, and then Windows will, or the sequence will detect that and do the necessary partitioning and things.
Yeah, so some of the tricks like the Config Manager team's working on are to enable that to be a more seamless process where you can just run one task sequence through the whole series of steps.
But just to add there, if you're talking specifically about the third-party disk encryption, then there's this command line parameter that we introduced called reflect drivers. So that can be used with, if you have the folder of drivers that is from your ISV, then that can be used, that can be passed to setup, and you that would be handled at that point.
Yeah, the question that we're looking for in that is how long is it going to take that part of the process? We have no idea, and I really haven't found anybody who knows yet.
Yeah, if you do the upgrade with the third-party encryption software built in, it shouldn't take significantly longer than doing an unencrypted upgrade. So that part's not bad. If you had to decrypt and then re-encrypt, yeah, that's going to take many hours.
Yeah, that's our fear.
Yeah, so that's a little bit more challenging. I've talked to customers who've tried going through that process before, and they've had large numbers of failures. In a lot of cases, disk drives that just can't handle the load of doing that, so they've had disk failures as a result of trying to do that.
Okay, thank you.
But certainly we know we need to make that process simpler. We're just still looking at ways to try to enable that.
I've been working on getting the in-place upgrade running through Config Manager. Thanks to Johan for the custom driver scripts to support that. It was very useful. What I find is if the task sequence starts to run but fails, the deployment is no longer available for that machine, which is fine when you're testing on a VM and you can revert. But on a physical machine, when you're testing drivers, if the deployment's no longer there, even when you edit the deployment, adds loads of time to testing because you've either got to find a different machine or you've got to remove the machine completely and re-add it in. Is it just me that this is happening to, or is that like an undocumented feature?
So depending on the scenario that you're going through, I'm guessing it's purely for test. You talk about retrying, so test. It could be a number of things depending on where in the sequence it failed. It could be that the client's been installed and it's now just become a known computer and there's actually a record there for it.
So it's an upgrade, so it's a known computer.
Oh, it's already a known computer.
Yeah, so I'm trying to upgrade a Windows 7 machine from Software Center with a task sequence.
Yeah, I know I've done that before, so it can work in some scenarios. In my case, I'm using a non-mandatory deployment of the task sequence. It may be the mandatory deployments trying to prevent a loop because you don't want the machine to keep trying over and over and over again after a failure.
Yeah, it could just be set in the execution history in the registry that could be stopping it is one thing that strikes me as a possibility. But yeah, if you set it as a non-mandatory task sequence for testing, you should be able to keep pressing go for as long as you want.
All right, thanks.
Sorry, see the same myself, non-mandatory. So an available test sequence, same behavior. So my question is, it's a little bit more general than the individuals here before me, and it's about drivers in general. So the Zen state, or the ideal state that we would like our environment to be is one wherein we would push out essentially a large update as part of the Windows servicing model, instead of a complex task sequence that babies the machine along through, if it's third-party device encryption, or if it's specific AV hurdles that have to be overcome as we move from one Windows release to another. So what my question is around is there going to be a more robust process by which we can apply these servicing updates? Is there going to be more cooperation with third-party vendors to incorporate their driver sets so that it just works and there's less acrobatics in task sequences? What's the end state for you all? Is there going to be more cooperation?
Yeah, I think the reflect drivers piece that Pallavi talked about is a good first step. That it enables you to stage those drivers onto the PC ahead of time and then use a servicing-based approach. So you just have to go through that extra step of placing the files on the PC where setup can find them. So that can be done. Beyond that, Yeah, there are plenty of opportunities. I'm not aware of specifics related to that.
I guess it's more of a strategic question. Is Microsoft looking to be the all-encompassing provider? It is a technique to exclude and say it's going to be prohibitively difficult if we're to include third-party anything.
I would rephrase your question as, are we working to make the process better? And of course, the answer is yes.
Okay. And is this a 5-year plan, 10-year plan? Yeah.
Every 6 months or every feature update that we come out with gets better.
So my question is about dynamic updates, and we're using SCCM to do our in-place upgrades. And we understand that dynamic updates include updated drivers as well as sometimes updates to the setup binaries. How can we get those setup binaries included into our operating system package? Our clients don't have internet access to be able to go out and pull those down from Windows Update.
Yeah. Yeah, Brian, I've been asking Steve that same question for the last 18 months.
And this question came up earlier. This question came up earlier in the previous session. And Irene, I'm going to defer because you answered this question about, I think the answer was, if you have the latest LCU, which is the latest cumulative update, you can deploy that with SCCM and get those dynamic updates because everything's part of that package.
Yeah, the dynamic update pulls down three pieces.
Yeah.
You get updated drivers, you get an updated compatibility database, and you get an LCU that's to address specific upgrade issues. So you really want the LCU to be in place so that the upgrade has a better chance
Correct.
Of succeeding, the latest compatibility information, and the updated drivers that Woo has sitting there waiting for you. If you don't have access to the internet, or if you're configured to point to WSUS, yeah, can't always get that. You can work around pieces of that, like install the latest LCU and you get all the fixes, but to get that updated compatibility and the additional drivers is something that we'd like to enable. It just requires figuring out how to get that in a place where the client can find them.
Correct.
Config Manager worked around that to a certain extent by providing a checkbox to enable dynamic update, which just temporarily changes the policy on the machine so that it's not talking to WSUS, then does the upgrade, and then flips it back to WSUS again. So as a workaround, you can do that, but it is going to download a pretty good sized chunk of stuff to update the PC.
And in addition to that, if you want the latest compatibility data, you actually have the option of using Upgrade Analytics. And with that, we can actually pull the latest compatibility data down to the system while it's running in down level. And then we'll use telemetry to collect all the compatibility events that happen on that machine, and we'll surface that in OMS. So even though you probably don't have it in the setup process, you can still have all that information before you try the upgrade.
Okay. We're managing all our domain-based, domain-joined clients with SCCM, and now we're migrating to Windows 10. And I'm aware of this feature, the new feature, the Windows Store for Business, to be able to manage apps and introduce apps and update the existing apps. My question is, would you consider it a wise move to introduce some sort of MDM solution additionally to the on-premises SCCM, or is it unnecessary? To be able to fully manage everything in Windows 10 that MDM solutions can?
Well, the first thing that you'll notice is if you install the Config Manager client on a Windows 10 PC, the MDM enrollment options are disabled because the SCCM client will register on the system to say this system is externally managed. So as a result, it disables the MDM pieces. So you can't easily have a SCCM managed client also MDM enrolled. We don't really need two management authorities fighting over the same PC to configure the same settings. To work around the Windows 10 configuration, what we do is we expose those MDM settings to the operating system via WMI and then have Config Manager set those via the WMI bridge. So you can configure all of the MDM settings that you need through Config Manager, using desired state or something compliance similar settings. To that.
So I wouldn't lose anything.
You shouldn't lose anything. Like a good example of that would be the information protection configuration for Windows 10 1607. You can build that configuration in Config Manager, and it will deploy it out to the Windows 10 client PC.
When you create the configuration items in Config Manager for those compliance settings, you have the option of not just selecting the default ones that are in the list. You can actually create your own one. So you can use the MSDN reference documentation to figure out all the links to them and create those settings that way. And that works quite well. I know that Danish person, Kent Augeland, has a really good post on how to implement that. So if you search for Augeland and configuration items, you should find a step-by-step guide.
So is that even strategically valid? And maybe I could imagine that some MDM solutions would give me a better management interface that's more transparent or easier to use?
You're asking if there are other MDM solutions other than Intune, which would be the one that we're most familiar with, that are easier to use, and you expect us to give you an answer to that?
Good try. Thank you.
Hi, so I have, I've been testing the in-place upgrade, Windows 7, Windows 10, while waiting for my SCCM environment to get off of 2012. And on encrypted machines, McAfee, and that's actually worked very well. My problem is my environment's filled with lots of machines with 128 gig SSDs. So my question really is, what do I do about Windows.old? Because I have a lot of machines where once I did this upgrade in test, I have no hard drive space. And I was manually using disk cleanup to remove Windows.old. Can that be done in task sequence to remove it? I mean, does it go away automatically?
The question was around Windows.old. What can be done to clean that up?
Yeah.
Currently, you're removing it manually by running the disk cleanup wizard?
Sure.
Yeah, so to automate that process, well, it happens on its own after 30 days with 1511, 10 days with 1607. You could also specify a command line parameter to set up in your task sequence to tell it to remove that as soon as the upgrade's complete. Now, whether that's advisable or not is a different conversation, because that Windows.old is used to enable rollback. So if you delete that any sooner, you then can't roll back to Windows 7. So it's a risk-reward discussion. Is there any harm in using that extra 8 to 10 gig of disk space for 10 days until it gets cleaned up automatically, or do you really need to get rid of it right away? If you need to get rid of it right away, that is an option.
It seemed to be a lot more than 8 to 10 gigs.
Well, you have to look at it from the perspective of how much disk space it's actually consuming, not how much disk space you see when you open it up in Explorer, right-click on the folder, and look at the size. Because it's all hard links, so it's created a hard link copy of the operating system in Windows.old, deleted the old operating system files from their original location, so they're all still linked in the old location, and then it lays down a new set of files. So the only real gain in disk space is the size of those new operating system files, which is where that 8 to 10 gig size comes from, that it's not going to be a complete copy of the OS. It's just going to be the hard links for the old operating system files that are now saved over here just in case you want to roll back.
Another question now based on that is, you said was it 8 days or 5 days for that it automatically deletes now?
10 days with 1607.
So is that controllable?
It's not controllable today.
It's not. It's fixed.
So yeah, it's hard-coded 30 days for 1511, 10 for 1607.
Okay, thank you.
You can run disk cleanup manually, but you can't really configure that amount of time.
Do anything if you try to run it early.
I do have one recommendation, and that is to not clean up the folder immediately. That is one of the biggest things with the in-place upgrade. We've done it a couple of times, pretty many times, and it always happens that someone said, I can't run this application, and I have no idea why. And having the ability to roll back immediately and say, I'm so sorry, let's fix this, you can continue to working, that is a very nice feature. And as Michael said, it doesn't consume the amount that most people think, because everybody does the same thing. Right click on windows.old and go, oh, it's a big folder. Yeah, it's hard linked. So you only save when you do run the cleanup about, I would say 9-10 gigs, something like that, at a maximum. So even if it's possible to clean up, because we had that as an idea in the beginning, and we just don't do that anymore. We keep that to have the ability to do the whoops, roll back, smile and look happy.
I mean, technically, if you like to have your own schedule, since you can do some of this, I mean, you can run it, the command line job, you can create your own scheduled task to do something after five days, 7 days. I just haven't tried it.
Yeah, there are a variety of blogs out there on how to automate Clean Manager, but they're not really supported options, but they do work.
And also, while I have my microphone, when you ask question, I'm getting old, so I, if you can be a little bit closer to the microphone, would be helpful. Thank you.
Okay, this is a Config Manager question. is there a neat way to kick off GPOs at the end of a task sequence?
Yes.
Do you have some more information on that?
First of all, the group policy client typically wakes up when the sequence is done and tries to do its thing. What we typically do is we just add another reboot. We use the SMST's post action variable in the sequence to force a reboot after the sequence is completed, because the sequence presses group policy processing, and that typically is enough to do it. In some rare scenarios, we're having customers using Windows 7 and doing like automatic logons and things. That typically requires a second group policy update and a second reboot. We just install a scheduled task that does that on the machine 3 minutes later. That has been a workaround where you have strange combination of policies where one reboot is not enough. But for most policy settings, that's all you need.
Thank you.
Well, I have a question regarding Config Manager also, and the USMT. We are planning a wipe and reload scenario where we switch to secure boot and UEFI. Normally, we could deploy this from the operating system, and the user could choose a task sequence, and the USMT migrate the data to a state migration point. But in another case, if we have technicians doing this and they don't want to ask the user for passwords, they have to do this offline. Now, when you use the USMT tool in Windows PE offline, you cannot access your distribution point offline migration folder. This information is not available. Now, we have made a script around this where we use our distribution point name, because that's available, and then we make a manual folder and just use the USMT tool to push the data there. But now we have to manage and delete this folder's content, and that folder will be large. We have several thousand machines that has to go out there on a single or two distribution points. So I was wondering if there's any way around that. We need to use to clean this folder after, let's say, one day.
Yeah, the basic issue is that the state migration point, when you create a folder in Config Manager to save the state, it is secured to the computer account. So when you boot into Windows PE to try to capture state offline, there's no computer account. So therefore, it can't access the folder that was created on the SMP. That's why UDI and the MDT UDI task sequence doesn't use state migration points. It uses UNC paths, because you can map a drive to that UNC path, create a folder with other security on it, and then migrate the state into that. But yes, that then means that you are managing that yourself.
I have to manage 76 DPs with a share and sit and delete data. I can make a lot of tasks for that, but that's...
So it sounds like a config manager user voice request.
It sounds exactly like a user voice request. Anyone else in the room think that would be a good thing? One or two? So what I suggest is go to configurationmanager.uservoice.com, stick it on there, and then at least 20 people in here are going to upvote it for you.
Hello, Johan. Can you hear me? just want to make sure. So SCCM environment integrated with MDT, creating an MDT task sequence and stealing some steps, specifically the partitioning step, wipe and reload. I'm finding some instances that's various clients, maybe 1% of the machines that we're deploying, I'm looking at status messages, and I'm seeing a BIOS-enabled machine that is skipping the BIOS step and trying to partition UEFI, which does not work. So I didn't know if there were some additional options or variables I could use to make these work. I suspect old BIOS, but I can't really do a lot about that, you know, after the fact. So
I think actually Rob wants this one.
You can have it if you want. So is it one particular manufacturer, build, model?
I've seen it with Dells and HPs. I couldn't call off the particular model right now, but I do know that the BIOS versions were fairly old on both instances that I've seen recently.
The only thing I can think of that I've seen customers have to do on some like random uses of like one model just fails to hit the criteria that you've specified through WMI is just check for that model specifically, so that you catch it before you then move on to the next step. It's not the most brilliant of solutions, but it will give you what you want. The other option would be to raise a case and get support to dig into the logs and see if they can figure out what's going on. And then if it turns out it's something that we're doing wrong, we can get a bug raised and look into it. But the quickest route to you getting a solution is probably to just figure out which are the models that are causing you problems, or BIOS versions it might be, as you say. See if there's some root cause analysis, and just see if you can create a quick workaround.
So the odd thing is that the conditions are very simple. They just say, is UEFI or not? Mm-hmm. And that's determined by just making an API call in Windows. It will ask for a specific UEFI variable, and if it gets an error back saying not supported, well, then we're not on a UEFI PC. So it defaults to... we're not on a UEFI PC. The only way it should say we're on a UEFI PC is if that API succeeds, which should only succeed if we actually booted using UEFI.
I mean, there are two problems to it, or two sides to it. If the code, which is a binary in both MDT LightTouch and Config Manager, that actually detects if a machine is capable of UEFI when the sequence starts to do its thing, if that one is buggy, then you have to file a bug. I mean, that's nothing you can do with this compiled file. If it's actually partitioning that is weird, we have seen that sometimes just cleaning the disk does the trick. So clean it, run it again, and it just works again. So if it detects as UEFI, but the partitioning fails, you can often fix it by cleaning. If the detection is wrong, there is little you can do.
And that's what I'm seeing, but the idea of sticking the model in to the options and separating out the options so that I can skip those four steps that are there and just say, if this model, it's BIOS.
Yeah, and you'll still only need the same number of steps. You just add the conditions into the task sequence logic. So it won't complicate your task sequence too much. It just means that you go, we know this is a problem, we're going to catch it. But I admit we suggested that the previous question went to user voice. It sounds like support is probably the appropriate route for you to go down, because it looks like it needs investigating.
Or tell the client to update the BIOS. That would work too, probably. Thank you.
No worries.
Okay, my question is regarding the update process of bigger feature updates. Will Microsoft still essentially reinstall every 6 months, Windows essentially every 6 months, or will there be investigations, or are there investigations of a better process like Delta updates?
Looking around to see who wants to address that question. The basic question is feature updates, the process that's used today, are there any plans to improve that process or to change it to be more update-like? It is reasonably update-like, although behind the scenes it is doing an in-place upgrade process. There are no plans to really change that. We are looking at ways to optimize that to potentially reduce the amount of content that needs to be pulled down to each PC, but not beyond that. It's still going to be an in-place upgrade to go through each feature update.
Okay, thank you.
Hi there. Do we have the cluster-aware updating feature yet? Or when I just read the release notes, it looks like it's not supported with Config Manager. Is that accurate?
So we've been working on for quite some time, admittedly. If anyone's following the technical previews, we released the first one, I think, October last year. In that release, or in that technical preview, there is what we're now calling server groups, which was originally started out as our approach to cluster-aware updates. But as we iterated through the technical previews, we heard loud and clear from customers that, hey, we don't really necessarily want you to force us down a route of only being able to use this for cluster nodes in an actual cluster. So it will work for clusters, but we've kind of abstracted it. So you say, this is a group of machines that we want to protect a percentage or a certain number at any given time. And you put those into that collection, you specify that threshold, 25%, 10%, whatever it is, you specify that, and then we orchestrate the update process across those machines in that group so that we will only have whatever number you've specified at any given time being offline. So it works for clusters. If you've got a four-node SQL cluster and you put four machines or the four nodes into that one collection and say only one is allowed to be off at any time, we have pre- and post-update steps, so you can specify a script. So if you have drain and reload scripts that you need to run to move that workload around, it'll work for that scenario. But equally, if you have a server farm that's not in a traditional cluster, say a VDI farm of 100 machines that is load balanced some other way, again, we can put all of those machines into that one collection, turn on the server group feature, and you can specify that number. So we've abstracted the cluster, because that was the feedback we had for customers. And one of my customers specifically has said, hey, can we use this for 50,000 clients at one time? Maybe. We didn't think of that, but yeah, it should work. So it's just a simple token process between those clients in that collection so that it gives you that cluster aware, but it also gives you much more powerful control over the updates that are going to that collection. It's still in technical preview, and that's mainly based on our feature quality bar. We won't give you a feature in a production build that we're not happy with. So it stayed in technical preview for some time. I was having a debate with Jason from the PM lead from SECM. We're like, is this in 1610? I don't know, maybe. We're not entirely sure. But as soon as it is ready, it'll be in that production build for you. It's mainly due to the fact that we've had a lot of customer feedback saying it'd be good if it did this and this and this and this. So we've been continually iterating it over the past 12 months. But it's on its way. It's a pretty exciting feature. But bear with us. We'll have it with you when it's ready.
Thank you.
I've got about 200 Windows 10 clients in production. We're imaging SECM 1602. Everyone of those 200 machines is running the same task sequence. For some unknown reason, some of the SECM default client settings are not getting populated correctly to some of the clients. It's enough clients to know that it's not just like a one-off, two-off issue where something that happened, there was a hiccup on the network. Specifically, we're noticing it around remote control, where our default client policy does enable remote control. The service desk goes to connect to that person, and for some reason, their client is said never allow connections, but our default client policy is to allow. Any particular way I can troubleshoot that or look at it? I mean, we're all imaging from the same sequence. It just seems that some clients aren't getting the correct default client settings.
I mean, you do have log files on the client that you can compare with the system where everything actually worked compared with a system that doesn't work very well. You have the support tools from Config Manager, where you can get a quite detailed look on the policies and also compare them in between the system. But that's basically what you have to troubleshoot. It's those log files and those support tools that are available.
Policy Spy is one of my favorite tools in the Configuration Manager toolkit. I'm happy to admit that I have a favorite tool in the SCCM toolkit. That will actually give you a really nice friendly, is that maybe a good word for it? A friendlier view of the policy in WMI, so you can see what policy's in the actual namespace and also the requested namespace, so you can sometimes see, hey, it's in the requested namespace, but it's not made it into the actual namespace. You can also use it to see the events as we do the policy request from WMI, so you can see if, hey, nothing's actually happening here, so it could be a policy application issue. It also allows you to reset policy, so you can use, there's an option in the dropdown that says reset policy, and we'll wipe back the actual policy to the default policy so that we can then pull down some fresh policy and see if that applies. To be honest, at that point, a support case is going to be the best route because I'm struggling for suggestions of what you could do beyond that. It's going to need to go to the support folks so that they can spend some time really digging into what's going on.
You said the name of that tool was Policy Spy?
There is the Policy Spy that is part of the Config Manager toolkit. There is also the other tool I mentioned, the support tool, support center tool. It's also a separate download. Also has the option of looking in policies, requesting policies. And there is also a bunch of troubleshooting steps in it, together with a pretty good log viewer also. So you have everything in one set. You can also use it to collect data, a zip file, from a system that doesn't work, and send it to someone that just have the viewer of that tool so they can actually view the data and doesn't have to be on the client itself.
Thank you very much.
Two quick questions. One on roadmaps for OSD. So prior to OSD, we used a custom script to deploy images. And one thing that was really great about it is if it failed for any reason, we could pick up where it started and not start the process all over. With OSD, if something fails 3/4 through, oftentimes we have to begin the process all over again and takes a long time to sometimes image and bring machines up. Is there anything in the roadmap to pick up in the task sequence where it may be left off rather than beginning the process all over?
No. I'm struggling to think of ways that could possibly be achieved. I'm looking around to see if anyone else thinks that would be possible. I've spent many a day where I've been troubleshooting a task sequence that I'm building and you get further and further along and it still fails and then you go back through it.
Ours would fail for environmental reasons, right? Like maybe we couldn't connect to the network location that it's bringing, you know, the image down and the thing sat there at an admin screen or something, you know, so sometimes we have to kick that off again. So it's not like something that we're troubleshooting in the task sequence. It's, you know, an environmental impact thing that's happening that we just want to be able to kick it off from where it left off.
First of all, we have a session on Friday that is dedicated to just troubleshooting sequences for 75 minutes. So we will cover a lot of things there you can do, but short and story, if it breaks during the WinP phase, that there is no fixing it. It's basically start over. If it fails later on, what you can do to test things is you can create smaller sequences. Since 15.11, Microsoft fully supports launching applications in a separate sequence. It's been working for 8 years, but it's supported since 15.11. And that can allow you to do shorter tests and many more tests in a short time frame. And once you verify that they work, well, then you can do a full sequence. If you're talking about scripts, I've been using the service UI component from MDT a lot to just give me a command prompt from which I can run scripts over and over and over and change them and run them without having to do any new deployments, saving me a lot of time. And once I nail it, then I update my package or application and then try a complete deployment.
Yeah, the other option is another thing that the Config Manager guys have been working on are nested task sequences. So you could build a post-OS task sequence that's just to configure the operating system and include that in your OS deployment task sequence so that if you had a failure in that last part, you could rerun that as a separate task sequence. It's at least a good workaround, but it does require some amount of resiliency in those steps because they would have to figure out themselves, hey, has this already been done? And if so, don't try to do it again. Like, don't try to install Office twice. Move on to the next step, because that app's already there.
The priority should be to fix the environmental issues, of course.
Yeah.
Which is obvious.
Good luck with that.
But, and we see customers that don't really have the ability to do that. And they have been forced over to boot from media, complete the deployment from media, and doing things like that.
Yeah, we're looking at the offline build just for that reason, just to have
because
a...
Because they can't fix the whatever problem they have. Another way is something that I've seen Johan doing a couple of times, the ability to run a script within a sequence that says, if this condition is true, then create this file which blocks the sequence from continuing running, which means that because we do that when we test things, it could be used the same way and say, hey, can you just verify that we have access to this? As long as you can do it in a VB script or a PowerShell script, don't do a batch file, but a PowerShell script at least, then you could say, you pause the sequence unless this condition is true. So it is doable to put in these steps in a sequence on certain places. That gives you the ability to say, hey, the sequence has stopped. Yeah, it can't find the whatever it can't find. As soon as that condition then is true, it's going to continue.
Okay.
It doesn't solve the problem, but it gives you at least the ability to not hassle around with a broken sequence, which is...
Thanks.
It's a good job I bullied Aaron into letting me talk about nested task sequences yesterday.
Hello. We're getting our config manager up to date so that we can support Windows 10, and also trying to get ready to deal with the pace of upgrade cadence that is coming. I recently, we have a hierarchy of a central admin site and multiple primary sites under there regionally and north of 100 distribution points globally. In a lab infrastructure, I recently upgraded it to 1511, then enabled the service connector point role and let it get the upgrade to 1606 upgrade. Then when I kicked that off in the lab on the central administration site, I noticed it also, like, automatically it completed the upgrade there, then went down to the primary sites, the child sites, automatically upgrading them. Is there a way to intervene in that process if, say, for organizational requirements, change control procedures, whatever that I need to deal with, that I can upgrade that central site and then control when the upgrade goes to the child sites?
Absolutely. Okay. So for the benefit of everyone in the audience, as part of our bet in the current branch release of Config Manager, the upgrade is done in console through a servicing node. And as was just stated, when you install the CAS and you run the update, as soon as that's finished, we'll go out and we'll go ahead and we'll install on all of the primary sites. And one of the big changes we made in current branch is that we now support and to a certain extent recommend that we'll go ahead and we'll update all those primary sites in parallel. So it's a massive saving, especially in a big environment where you can reduce the overall upgrade time of your hierarchy. However, there are still some scenarios, such as working hours, maybe if you've got a large geographically spread environment around the world, or maybe there's political situations or even just process that says, yeah, we're not going to allow you to update multiple servers at once. So we added in 1511 as part of this change to the servicing concept, the ability to set service windows against site servers. So you can go in through the console and you can set a maintenance window, or effectively a maintenance window, against the site servers at the lower levels. So you can say this primary site's only allowed to go from 12 till 2 a.m. and this one from 4 a.m. to 6 a.m. and you can absolutely schedule it in that way. But unlike previous releases where we'd say don't do primary sites together, we've made changes so that you can run those primary sites in parallel.
Thank you very much.
No worries.
Hi. First off, I want to thank all of you guys for all the sessions this week. It's been awesome. So my question is about provisioning Windows as a service and creating the rings. Do you know, I'm starting to think that we maybe don't have the best cross-section to represent all of our business lines for piloting. Do you know if there's maybe a way to programmatically, you know, take a cross section of Active Directory groups, or maybe just some best practices around identifying applications, et cetera, that we can ensure that we have coverage for piloting?
So this is actually one of the things that we're looking into for Upgrade Analytics. In Upgrade Analytics, we already have the inventory of applications and some indication into use. And one of the algorithms that we're actually using in the consumer ecosystem is building clusters. So we want to know which applications appear together very often and what right ranked order would be. Basically, what is the minimum number of machines that would cover a certain percentage of your applications? We're looking into that. I'll take it as a piece of feedback and pitch it as another use case for that.
Thank you.
Are you using SCCM or?
Yes.
So, I was just going to say that this doesn't necessarily apply just to Windows servicing. It's something that I've been recommending to customers for many years for software update patching, is that as an SCCM admin, you kind of feel that you have the responsibility to make sure that you represent your environment as part of your piloting and your testing, but you can delegate that responsibility a little bit to the application owners. Most organizations have an application owner for the big applications that are used in their organization. Reach out to those guys and say, hey, we want to make sure that we test against your environment. Can you suggest some machines that we can run that against?
I'll try. Yeah.
They're going to be the ones that complain if it doesn't work, so there's an opportunity to kind of reach out and share the love to make sure that, you know, they're working with you so that you're testing against their devices so that they're the ones most qualified to tell you if something doesn't work when you've patched or upgraded their machines. So work with them and get them to do some of the piloting for you. Obviously, you're going to do the heavy lifting and put them into collections and deploy, and you're going to do that ringing, but they're the ones that can say, hey, yeah, use these five machines. That's the support team's machines. It's all running on there. We'll do the test. So it's just kind of a process way that you can achieve that on top of any automation that we can pull out.
Don't walk away yet.
Okay.
So in addition, Windows Update for Business, the Windows as a Service, is still relatively new in the ecosystem too, and we're working hard to work with customers like you to partner to help a lot. So find me immediately afterwards. There's another session in Building C as well after this one where Brian McNeil's going to have a portion of that. Brian, who was up and had to leave to go to that session. But we're looking to partner, so find me. We'd love to work with you and get a little more hand-holding on this for a limited time only to go ahead and get some of these documented so that everybody can benefit from it.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Hope you guys can hear me. I have a two-part question. It's related to CM, IBCM, and in-place upgrade. So currently right now, I've created an MDT deployment to insert into Config Manager as an application, and I use variables and stuff to identify how I'm going to push and drivers and stuff like that. The first part of this question is, I did a lot of work so I could push it out, but if there's an error, someone, you know, I can't identify that until there's a failure. What I'd like to do is identify those machines early. So one of the things that we used was a scan only, but someone has to run that. And the IBCM on my user remote, never in Office. So they're having to wait to download the entire deployment just so that they can run scan only because of the requirements for setup. So one, first question is there a plan for the enterprise SKU that we can run setup with just a limited subset of files without having to download the whole entire setup? And then number two is, because we're IBCM, so he's been told and confirmed with our DSE that operating systems can't be deployed using the task sequence. Is there any plans to make any changes in VNext past 1606, which would support that for in-place upgrade using task sequences and operating system in IBCM mode?
So the first part was about running the setup scan, the scan-only option, without needing the install.wim. Today, unfortunately, you need to have that full 3.5 gig package in order to do that.
Or
the follow-up piece would be, use an alternative, which would be upgrade analytics.
Right. So basically the way upgrade analytics works is we invoke the same command that does the scan only piece, and then we send that data up and we present it to you. And you can run that scan whenever you'd like it. So we'll come to the same result that setup would come to, and we'll show it to you in OMS, and you can export the list and target that way.
It would be, this is for Rob. It would be very nice to see a blog post coming up on how to actually run that part of your normal sequence, so you can have that sort of condition and set the flag.
So two things. The cool thing is in the current technical preview, there is integration between Upgrade Analytics and SCCM in preview. So we can pull the state, whether a machine is ready or not, into SCCM, and you can target collections on that. It's actually on SMS system. So that's one starting point. The other thing is on the Upgrade Analytics blog, aka.ms/upgrade analytics. I actually blogged about how to kick off the Upgrade Analytics script through an SCCM package program and documented the return code. So you have that piece as well.
There's also a session, I think, immediately after this one, 4 p.m. My watch is still on UK time. Can someone tell me if it's nearly 4 p.m.? There's a session at 4 p.m. with Jason Githens, the group program manager for SCCM, and a whole host of Windows folks. I don't know if you guys are heading over there as well. And they're going to talk through all the integration points with Windows. And I think I might be throwing Jason under the bus here, but I think one of those is the Windows Analytics as well. So go check that out. It's in technical preview as well. I'd encourage anyone that's using SCCM to download the technical preview. It's the best way to see our roadmap of what's coming up and what's going to make it into production. But that it's on its way, it's on our roadmap, we're working on it.
Okay.
So you should be able to do that without needing to transfer the data.
Okay.
As for your second question, I'm not aware that it's on the roadmap. I think you might have sought me out earlier this week and I said I didn't know then. I still don't know, I'm afraid. Been busy doing sessions. But come see me at the booth and just remind me, and we'll see if we can double check that. But I don't think it's on the roadmap unless anyone corrects me. Michael, I don't know if you've heard anything different, but I'm not entirely sure that it would be a big use case for a lot of customers, transferring 10 gigs worth of OSD down to users in their own homes. Please correct me if I'm wrong. Go to UserVoice, configurationmanager.uservoice.com, stick it in there, and if we get enough votes, it'll definitely make it onto our radar of things that we can potentially look at.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm doing in-place upgrade of Windows 10, and when the user decides he wants to roll back, scenario is locked down, so he can't do it himself. So I would like to present him with a way, with a script that he can run as an advertised program, something, to automate the rollback. Are you aware of a way to script that rollback?
So to script, sorry.
Yeah. Not today.
To script the uninstall, there isn't a process today, but that's something that we can look into. The thing with uninstall is you have to be an admin on that machine, so that's why it's not possible to kick it off remotely. But that's something that we can look
into. I can't even kick off the interactive process with an SCCM program, something?
Yeah. We've had the conversation because there have also been organizations who've said, we want to deploy, maybe we deploy a few hundred machines, then realize that there's a problem and we want to roll all of them back without having to send an IT technician from machine to machine. So we're looking at it. We'll see what's possible. But it's not possible today. It's only interactive by a local administrator.
Thanks.
So I want to go back to the question that a gentleman had earlier with the encrypted systems and trying to do in-place upgrades to Windows 10. I have a colleague who sent me an email just now that he is working through that process as we speak. He's got a task sequence created, and I just wanted to walk through and find out where he's hitting a wall. We're kicking it off from within the user environment using a task sequence, capturing USMT, and then it's going to go stage. It's going to kick off the in-place upgrade, which is going to stage the pre-boot files. The problem is that the PXE file or the WinPE boot files are being staged to the encrypted volume, and when it reboots, it's going to crash out at that point because the volume is encrypted and it cannot write the WinPE to the encrypted volume. So do we know where there's a spot where we can work around that, or how we can work through that to get it to be able to boot back up and continue on through the task sequence?
Yeah, in that particular scenario, it sounds like you're describing more of a wipe and load rather than an upgrade.
It is.
The wipe and load, you're back to the old style of injecting the necessary drivers for the third-party encryption software into the boot image that you're using.
Right.
So that when it boots, it can read Windows PE into the RAM disk, and you can then access the drive.
I spent about a week with a customer doing that. We got it to work for one specific version of their encryption software, just to find out that had all kinds of different versions out there in the environment. I have customers I talked to that have been working months trying to figure that process out through a normal refresh. It came to a point where we realized this is just a waste of time. So we went and did a replace that I talked about before. You have one sequence that back up the stuff to either a state migration point or to a UNC path or to a local NAS, something close to the client, and then you run a normal bare metal deployment on the very same machine that in the end restores the backup. So it appears to be an in-place upgrade. You can say it's like a refresh, but it's really a replace of the same machine.
And would that be booting from a media instead of having...
That would be booting from media, or rather preferably Pixie to get the media.
Okay, so that's
better.
One way to bypass it altogether is just to go with completely different boot media, separate from trying to stage it to the local machine.
Yeah, I mean the backup will do the job, and if you really want the automation of the complete picture, if the vendor has utility to allow you to force it to Pixie boot next time, I know Mike Terrell has a blog post on how to configure a machine to Pixie boot the next time. So you have one sequence that does the backup and then flips the BIOS to Pixie boot the next time and then reboots the box. Okay. As long as the machine is removed from the collection and there is a deployment for it, it will pick up. But the timing is tricky.
And your experience with the third-party drivers? We are able to get the third-party drivers injected. It is actually getting to the point where it is booting Pixie. And he's reporting that at that point that those drivers that have been injected are
when you do it, the
causing
replace
problems with the rest of the process when it tries to reformat the drive and reboot. The presence of those drivers are now making it fail again when it tries to reboot into the non-encrypted. So
when you do the replace scenario, you don't have to worry about the encryption because
right.
You're wiping the disk completely. You start fresh.
I was just wondering if you had seen anybody that had gotten to that point and had hit that particular wall of injecting the drivers and not able to get or found something else to be able to back those drivers out again to get into the new operating system as it's laid down.
I mean, I've spent
hours
and hours.
At that point, you're kind of at the mercy of the ISV of asking them for the process to use for that.
Right.
Some of them have documented it pretty well to explain how to go through that process, but there are some that, it's interesting.
If the vendor's not going to be of any help, then we're just dead at that point, right?
It's tricky to do it that way.
Yeah.
It is way easier to treat it as a replace.
easier, but it doesn't look better to the management because we don't have the person that can just click a button and it happens. So then we have to have somebody that's at the machine with media that does kicks it off and
you are more likely to get it right and
that
automated to the replace
better,
process. Hack your way around the refresh.
Right. Thank you.
But that is generally a good question to ask the ISVs. When you ask them for drivers to inject into Windows PE or to use with Reflect drivers, make sure you ask them if they have a required minimum version of their software for that to work. Because a lot of organizations deploy PCs with the flavor of the quarter, and as a result, they have all kinds of different disk encryption software versions, and they all work differently.
Thank you.
We created an ICD provisioning package to join the domain in our dev environment, and it works beautifully. The only thing I saw was we were able to open that up with like 7-zip and see the credentials for the Surface account, including the password. Is there any way to hide that in there?
You can encrypt the ICD package. You then have to put a password on it to decrypt it.
Yeah. So if we put it on a share somewhere, and they would not be able to open that up, or would they just?
They would.
Or
if
they would
double clicked on it to install it, it would prompt for the password.
Okay.
Before it could complete the installation.
Okay, that sounds good. All right, thanks.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for being here. I had a question about Config Manager and OSD. We're actually looking at moving back to MDT. We have a pretty large installation of Config Manager, 120,000 clients, 1,000 DPs. One of the problems we've had with OSD is the content lookups that have to occur during the imaging process. You know, specifically, it has to go out and look for every application and package and all the pieces of content for software updates and so on and so forth. And we found that adds a lot of time to the imaging process. We can image in MDT about half that time and do a lot more computers at the same time. Is there any discussions about improving the efficiency of that communication back to the management point where it doesn't have to go back there for every single piece of content, or maybe goes communicates once to the management point, gets some information about where it should look, here's the DP, and maybe tries that DP again for the next piece of content before it goes back to the management point?
What version of SCCM are you running?
We're running 15.11. We're about to move to 16.06.
Okay. So in 16.06, you should already have all the fixes that we've put in. So boundary lookup or content lookup and boundaries groups have gone through a fair amount of improvement since 2012 R2, really. We saw some fairly poor performance if you had lots of boundaries, especially if you had lots of IP range boundaries. We've made a number of changes to improve the store procedure, and also we've also added, I think it's in 15.11, we've added content cache. So if we know that a client was in a particular boundary group in a previous content lookup, we'll assume that it's in that one and stick that at the top of the list. So we've made some changes, but it sounds like maybe that you're not benefiting from those.
Yeah, I mean, is it even now in 16.06, is it still going back to the management point to look up every piece of content that is involved in that imaging process? It doesn't just go to the distribution point that it found the first time it looked something up?
No, we still do the content lookup, okay. Because if it's not on that distribution point, or there's a few scenarios where you wouldn't want it to assume that it's on that distribution point. Like maybe the content happened to be on a poor distribution point, that first one. Last thing you want is it going to that distribution point for everything.
Right.
So, I mean,
part of our problem is maybe the number of distribution points too. I mean, other people may not be seeing this if they don't have 1,000 DPs or something like that. I mean, that seems to add to the time too that it actually takes to do that lookup.
That might be that could be bloating the query that's then returning, because it's having to build out a large number of distribution points.
Right.
There's nothing really that springs to mind. As I say, at 15.11, you should be benefiting from a lot of fixes. And I've worked with customers that came across the issues in the 2012 R2 timeframe, the 2012 timeframe, and I've seen the progression, and I did heavy amount of investigation with previous customers to see those benefits have been realized. So I'd suggest raising a case with support to see if there's anything that they can suggest. It could be simple things like reindexing of the database, make sure that the database is healthy and that you're running through good housekeeping best practice. It could just be that you've got a large number of boundaries and a large number of distribution points, and that's just exponentially increasing the return list.
Right, that's what we think too. Okay, thanks, appreciate it.
I think we can take one more, and then we need to wrap it up to give everyone time to run across the convention center to the next session and to let them clean the room and get set up for the next one. Yeah. We'll hang around up front for anyone else who still has questions, but thanks for attending. Let's finish up with the one here.
Okay. This is probably quick, but does Microsoft have any plans to allow for an in-place upgrade to a custom WIM, custom image? And if not, why not?
There are no plans. The challenge is the merging process, that if you build a custom WIM, you're probably doing it because you want to put software in it. And if you put software in it, how do you take an image that contains Office 2016, a current OS that contains Office 2010, and upgrade from one to the other? You'll probably end up with two versions of Office getting merged together, and neither one of them is going to work right. Yeah. So there's the problem. So it's required to keep that clean image to give us a place to migrate the apps into.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thanks for attending. We do have another Q&A tomorrow and plenty of other sessions.